President Trump's campaign to pull allies like Australia and Japan into defending the Strait of Hormuz is growing more urgent by the day. So far, Anthony Albanese won't be drawn, but how about Japan, another US ally, navigating the conflict without wanting to displease the Americans, but needing to safeguard their economy? I'm Kylie Morris. This episode of Global Roaming, The View from Tokyo, with Japan's former ambassador to Australia and LDP ruling party insider Shingo Yamagami.
I had a very interesting conversation with a cab driver.
Where was he from?
He was from India. He was complaining about the rise of petrol price, gas price.
Shingo Yamagami, welcome to Global Roaming.
Wow, thank you for having me.
First question, how involved should Japan be in Iran, in the conflict?
This is not only, whether Japan would be drawn into the war of US and Israel vis-a-vis Iran, but I think it's a matter of life or death to the Japanese economy, because we do import, more than 90% of, our crude oil from the Middle East. And out of that, 70 or 80% pass through this strait. So whether Americans like Japanese involvement or not, Japan has to get ourselves, involved in any way possible. It could be our dispatching minesweeping vessel, or it could be helping, our ally through refueling, or it could make use of our experience based upon anti-piracy operations in Africa. So all in all, there are some things we can do, perhaps, in cooperation with country like Australia.
Does Japan currently have a working relationship with the regime in Tehran? I mean, you have been friendly with Iran in the past.
True. And historically, we have enjoyed, very good friendly relationship, between Iran and Japan. And in fact, when I was, diplomat in London, from time to time, I had a meeting with a representative of a Revolutionary Guard stationed in London. So, and also when I was an intelligence chief, I made a trip to Tehran to have a one-on-one session with their intelligence chief. So all in all, our relationship is not bad. But that said, when you think about this current Iranian regime, for example, they have just, detained bureau chief of NHK in Tehran. He's yet to be freed. And also, a Japanese tanker has been attacked on several occasions, in the past. So are we really friendly? That's a question lingering on my mind. And, whether we have enjoyed historically good working relationship or not, there are some things that need to be corrected.
I wonder whether you can leverage those relations that you've had in the past. I mean, Mr. Araghchi, Iran's foreign minister, was previously the Iranian ambassador to Japan. So presumably there are some relationships on a personal level with him. And he has said that he's ready to support Japan-related vessels to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. That's what he told the Kyoto news agency. Why not take him up on that offer?
I think, frankly speaking, we Japanese do not like ourselves, only ourselves to be exempted, because it has to be universal. I mean, the Strait of Hormuz is an international strait. Every country, every vessel should enjoy the freedom of navigation through the strait. So, yes, we are willing to talk with Iranians. And already our foreign minister, Motegi-san, he knows our foreign minister Araghchi, and they have been talking on several occasions in order to ensure the free passage of oil tankers and commercial vessels. But we will keep on doing so. And as for Japan, you know, I think, you know, united efforts is very important. That is why Japan, you know, in talks with, you know, countries like UK, France, Germany, Italy, and Netherlands, you know, we issued a statement to call for de-escalation of situation, tensions, and also free passage. And this kind of international effort is very important in terms of calling on Iranian government to stop doing something too extraordinary. Because it doesn't make sense to attack, you know, commercial vessels at the strait in response to US and Israeli military campaign. It doesn't make sense at all.
But if you have a limited options to respond to aggression from another state, which is the situation that Iran is in, surely no one is surprised. I mean, wargaming, people who are involved in intelligence and security for decades have been wargaming what happens if Iran comes under attack and the Strait of Hormuz is closed by Tehran.
If you want to be a realist, you know, in the international box, you know, politics, such an argument to be made. But at the same time, you know, when we saw, you know, the first, you know, military campaign by Americans and Israeli against Iran, many pundits, especially in Japan, talked about the violation of international law. If that's a violation of international law, what about this Iranian counterattack, you know, through the Strait of Hormuz, or attacking gas station or oil station in Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, Bahrain? It's another violation of international law. So, no, my point here is don't be a hypocrite. And here we are. You know, how come we have to be harmed by Iranian counterattacks? And that's a, you know, big, big question to be answered by our friends and colleagues in Iran.
Was the legality or illegality of the war something that was raised by your prime minister, by Sanae Takaichi, when she met with Donald Trump in Washington last week?
I think she is wise enough not to join the boat of criticizing American action, you know, along with Chinese and Russians. I think she is wiser than that. What she said vis-a-vis Trump is, you know, she explained in response to Trump's call for allied efforts at the Strait of Hormuz, she just explained to Donald Trump, you know, what Japan can and cannot do under the existing legal regime. And I think that met, you know, receptive ears. At the same time, you know, she assured to Donald Trump, you know, we would like to do whatever possible under existing legal regime. I think that's what allies should do at this juncture.
Perhaps to better illustrate that, let's talk about the example of the minesweeper. So the idea that, or the proposal that Japan might send one of its minesweeping units to the Strait of Hormuz. There are constitutional limits, though, on how that might happen. So can you walk us through what Prime Minister Takaichi might have had to explain to Donald Trump about deploying Japanese vessels?
Well, I think a minesweeping vessel is one good example to be considered because, you know, in the past, you know, we have done that in the Middle East. No, I think it was right after the Gulf War back in early 1990s, we sent our, you know, minesweeping vessels. And interestingly, we have a lot of experience in Japan because, you know, after the war, Americans, you know, placed a lot of mines, you know, in and around Japan, and we had to get rid of them. So through, you know, this exercise, you know, we acquired a lot of experiences, and there are, you know, we could make use of that in the Middle East. If we could do that before, we can do it right now. But the problem is, you know, minesweeping vessels are very, very vulnerable. You know, it could be easily attacked by Iranian, you know, vessels. So in order to, you know, see marine, you know, sweeping vessels operating normally, we have to first ensure the safety. So the cessation of warfare is important.
Sorry to interrupt. So it was something that would be more likely to be considered by Tokyo once the fighting has stopped or once there's some kind
of
ceasefire.
Yeah, that's the point. And but, you know, are we not going to do anything in the meantime? That's another question. And if that comes to the stage of, you know, ongoing, you know, warfare, I think we can send our vessel, you know, to the nearby ports or oceans, in the vicinity, so that we can help, you know, allied vessels to engage. Refueling is another example, because we have done that, you know, at the time of Afghanistan war. We have sent our, you know, naval vessels over there.
Because there are some constitutional limits around what kind of a role Japan can play, unless it's deemed that Japan is under a kind of, is directly a threat, is in a survival threatening situation. But what you're saying is there are other allied responsibilities that Japan can take on without tripping over those constitutional definitions.
I think, to be very, very plain with you, what Japan can do is, what Japan cannot do is, no, is like this. I mean, every member of the United Nations has a right to both, individual self-defense as well as collective self-defense. So, for example, in the case of Australia, if your ally, Americans or Brits are attacked, you can go and help Americans or Brits, even if you are not being attacked, actually. That's a concept of collective self-defense. But in the case of Japan, under Article 9 of Japanese Constitution, we are prohibited to resort to this right of collective self-defense, although we have the right to individually defend ourselves. So that's a big difference between Australia and Japan in this case. But that said, if Japan is not helping, U.S. war efforts, real efforts, logistical support is, possible without engaging in any, war fighting, if Iranians are not going to attack, Japanese vessels, if they can ensure the safety of our vessels, we can also engage in such exercise as minesweeping. So I think, even under the current, situation, there are several things, Japan can do. And my point here is Japan should do something.
Let's talk about Article 9. There have been sizable protests in Tokyo against the war, but also on this issue of potential constitutional reform by the Takeuchi government. That's something that that the Prime Minister could do. She talked about it during her campaign, but she needed to win a two-third majority in Parliament to change the Constitution. She's done that. What does she have in mind, just briefly?
I think as a conservative politician, her ultimate goal is to, revise, this American-imposed Constitution. It's been already 80 years. Nobody is concerned about the resurgence of Japanese militarism. That's a complete BS. So I think, it's high time for Japan to, take on more, responsible role, not only regionally, but also, globally. So politicians like Abe and Takeuchi are headed for that direction. But as you rightly pointed out, it's a matter of, political arithmetics. She needs numbers. And when it comes to upper house, she's yet to reach, two-thirds majority. So that's a really, really high hurdle to overcome.
So let's talk about some more numbers. What do the polls show? Is there support in Japan for the war that was launched by the US and Israel against Iran?
I think there are mixed opinions when it comes to U.S. engaging in warfare against Iran at this time. But I think a majority of opinion is understanding of what the U.S. had to do, because we have seen Iranians dragging their feet when it comes to totally eradicating the doubt held by the international community vis-a-vis their nuclear and arms development program. Like Iran, Japan is a non-nuclear state under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, NPT, and we have accepted all kinds of safeguard measures by IAEA. But what about Iranians? They have invited doubt. They have, undergoing this, uranium enrichment program, underground. So I think this is something Iranian owes, you know, responsibility. But on top of that, you know, this export of, you know, Islamist, you know, terrorism, you know, through Hezbollah, Hamas, you know, Houthis, you know, this is something they owe us explanation as well. Because Japan has been on the receiving end of murderous act of these, you know, fundamental, you know, Islamists.
But when it comes to popular opinion, though, too, I wonder about what appetite there might be. It's a question that Australia is addressing right now in terms of the global economic shock that seems destined to follow this war. We're already feeling it in our gas and petrol prices. So doesn't that perhaps give some Japanese people a pause for thought? You know, do they support an American war in the Middle East if this is the kind of outcome it has for them?
I was, you know, after I came to Australia just a few days ago, you know, I read, you know, various newspapers, I saw TV programs. I was a bit, you know, surprised to hear, you know, this harsh reaction against, not only against the war, but, you know, Australian people's concern about high prices. And if you look at the Japan's case, you know, we have oil reserve of 254 days. And out of 250 days, you know, reserve, Takaichi government was quick enough to release 45 days of reserve already. So they are doing their best, try to, you know, prevent oil prices or gas prices from rising. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you know, she made sure gasoline price needs to be below, you know, 170 yen per liter. So I think there are several things, you know, government can do at the time like, you know, this. And, you know, once again, you know, I would like to remind you that we are calling on Iranian government, you know, directly. You know, Foreign Minister Motegi is talking to Foreign Minister Araguchi. I'm quite sure, you know, Australian Foreign Minister is doing the same. But there are, you know, diplomatic efforts as well as, you know, I mean, domestic measures, you know, to be taken. So it's easy to blame, you know, Donald Trump, you know, on his attack on Iran. But, you know, what has Iran, you know, doing, you know, beforehand, and what is Iran doing right now after the attack? That should be all, you know, also strictly examined.
Shiko, you mentioned the healthy gas and oil stocks in Japan. Of course, a lot of that is sent from here. There are major Australian exports to Japan. Are you concerned at all that this reaches a point when Australia might limit exports?
I think, you know, this is something I have been saying to my friends in Australia that, you know, Australia's credibility, you know, rests with it has been a reliable source of, you know, natural resources to Japan, including, you know, coal and gas and iron ore. And nobody wants to hurt that reputation and credibility of Australia. Yes, you know, we are friends, you know, we are strategic partners. And if there is any way we can help Australia in overcoming this economic difficulty, you know, Japan should be able to help it. But it shouldn't come at the expense of Australia's long-earned reputation.
So if Penny Wong were to call your foreign minister or Anthony Albanese, call Prime Minister Takaichi and say, look, we actually can't spare the oil and gas. We need to look after our own economy. We will need to reduce the amount of export to Japan. Would that be met with a level of understanding?
Well, I have to point out, you know, first, you know, this is not only Australian venture, you know, I mean, this, you know, or especially, you know, gas export from Australia to Japan was made possible by joint cooperation between Japan and Australia. Japanese corporations, you know, including, you know, Inpex and various, you know, trading companies invested a lot in this country. finding and developing, digging and transporting. And you shouldn't underestimate the fruit of these joint efforts. And if there is any lost credibility, I'm afraid that might reverberate through other sectors of the economy. And Australia-Japan relationship is a post-war successful history in this region. There is no question about it. Once bitter enemies, but now we are hand in hand together. So yes, we are friends in need of friends indeed. We are happy to help you, but once again, it should not come at the expense of the fruit of our joint efforts in the past.
Shingo, we've spoken a couple of times, and there's something that I really want to know what you think of. There was an extraordinary moment in the Oval Office when Sanae Takaichi met Donald Trump earlier this month. As I recall, I think it was a Japanese journalist who asked a question of Donald Trump, which was...
Japan and US are a very good friend, but one question, why didn't you tell US allies in Europe and Asia, like Japan, about the war before attacking Iran? So we are very confused about we Japanese citizens.
Well, one thing, you don't want to signal too much. When we go in, we went in very hard, and we didn't tell anybody about it because we wanted... Surprise. Who knows better about surprise than Japan? Okay? Why didn't you tell me about Pearl Harbor? Okay? Right? He's asking me, do you believe in surprise? I think much more so than us. And we had to surprise him, and we did. And because of that surprise, we knocked out, the first 2 days, we probably knocked out 50% of what we, and much more than we anticipated doing. So, if I go and tell everybody about it, there's no longer a surprise, right?
Prime Minister Takaichi shuffled in her seat, widened her eyes, but didn't respond directly. But if you can read body language, it was fairly clear what her response was. Is that a funny joke?
If I, had sit, by the side of Prime Minister Takaichi, I would have advised her to say, "Thank you, Mr. President, for your compliments on our brilliant military operations." I'm not joking, but I think the point here is U.S. Japan have long overcome our, wartime, bitterness. And we have truly accomplished, post-war reconciliation. So I think, in retrospect, this journalist from TV Asahi, I don't know his true intentions. He wanted to undermine the, friendly atmosphere of summit meeting or not. But I think it was too naive, for him to ask a question like that, because we are not joining military operation. How come U.S. has to, inform Japan in advance of this military campaign?
It's a complex world. We're allies. It's quite nice to know, isn't it, if there's going to be a war in the Middle East and one of your key allies is going to start one.
But if you have any experience in the military or not, but I think it's quite natural for they would like to limit this knowledge of surprise attack, need to know basis. That's ABC of international politics.
Well, but
right?
We have Five Eyes, right? We have intelligence cooperation. They don't need to put it in our newspapers.
Well, I was often told by my Aussie counterparts, it's not really Five Eyes, it's four eyes and one wink. But anyway, I think Australia has been treated, very well by Americans, and I think it's a bit of a surprise that UK and Australia are not acting in concert with, U.S. forces at this time, because, nuclear development, of Iran is a matter of, global concern. And it was a concern to Japan as well. And like I said, this terrorism exported was also another concern. You might recall, Japanese translator of, Salman Rushdie's book, was, you know, assassinated in the middle of the day on the campus of Tsukuba University. So, yes, it is a matter of international concern, and we would like to see, you know, Iran, you know, acting, you know, in accordance with international laws and custom, not exporting terrorism or not annihilating their own citizens, you know, in the streets.
Shingo Yamagami, I probably have to let you go, but I do have one final question,
yes.
And that is about China. I know it is a nation of great interest for you and for many Japanese. Will China enter this war? Can you imagine China involving itself?
I don't think so. I mean, my simple answer is, you know, China will be, you know, taking the wait-and-see attitude, and what they would like to see is Americans getting bogged down in Iran and wasting their resources over there. And that's a concern for both Australia and Japan. We don't want to see, you know, power vacuum. We don't want to see attention vacuum in Asia, in the Pacific. And we have to make sure, you know, here, you know, Australia and Japan, you know, should join, you know, voices to call for, you know, cessation, and Americans get out of Iran as soon as possible.
As someone with a very fierce interest in and experience in foreign policy and national security around Japan and these alliances and the way that they work, we have all watched the US move its assets from the Indo-Pacific to prepare for this engagement in the Middle East. There are Air Force carriers, naval carriers, there are special forces who are being moved from bases in Okinawa, and there is a real drain of the kinds of defences that I guess we all rely upon communally. Is that something that has caused a sense of being exposed or unsettled in Japan?
That's a good question. And at this moment, you know, there is no such feelings apparent, you know, in the Japanese media or in Japanese, you know, thinkers. But as you rightly pointed out, you know, it could be problematic, you know, in the near future. So in that regard, what we should do is to just, you know, not to let Americans, you know, just, you know, focusing their whole energy on Iran. So in that regard, there is something, you know, we can do together to help Americans get out of Iran. And also, I mean, when it comes to, you know, our own, you know, national interest, whether Aussies or Japanese, we have to take care of our own region, Indo-Pacific region, especially South China Sea, East China Sea, Taiwan Strait. We have to concentrate our efforts, and we have to get continued U.S. commitment to this region. So there is a lot of role to be played by Aussies and Japanese here. That's my point.
Shingo Yamagami, thank you very much.
Thank you.
どうもありがとうございました。
ありがとうございました。
That was the former ambassador to Australia explaining some home truths about our gas and oil exports to Japan and Tokyo's relationship to Donald Trump. As always, if you have thoughts, please share them to global.roaming@abc.net.au. Latika and Geraldine will be back tomorrow. You can hear the show at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. weekdays on ABC Radio National. Thanks for listening.